Hello again, welcome to Your Politics, the RTE Political Team's weekly podcast from Leinster House. With me this Thursday, the 12th of September, Paul Cunningham, Sandra Hurley and Joe McGraelig. It's a season of think-ins, pre-Doyle resumption, election speculation. Paul, talk to us about that. Fine Gael was the latest. Where are we on that?
Yes, I have just returned from Tullamore in County Offaly, where I was attending the Fine Gael think-in. So think-in, people wonder just exactly how much thinking is going on, because in many ways this is a media circus. It's an opportunity for a political party to get their message out. Fine Gael had the day to themselves. If you imagine next Monday, there's going to be three political parties all on the same day trying to get their message out. So that's going to be a bit more confusing ahead of the Doyle coming back on Wednesday.
Glad my day off
is Monday. Lucky you. So Sinn Féin is one of the parties, Fianna Fáil. Sock Dems are the following day. Who's the third party?
The Greens are on Monday.
The Greens
as well,
on Monday. Yeah. So it's going to be a mayor.
And between now and then, there's Aintu and People Before Profit as well.
So. And then they've all got to make the trip to the ploughing as well, Joe.
The ploughing happens to coincide with the think-ins this week as well, and the resumption of the Doyle on Thursday, or on Wednesday rather, the 18th. So it's going to be a really hectic time now, you know. In terms of the Fine Gael thinking, I got to spend a couple of hours there yesterday as well, when they were all arriving, and there was a great bonhomie and a great feeling of optimism. The energy of Simon Harris, I think, is kind of, you know, it dissipated throughout the party, and they're all feeling it. But the question is when the election takes place.
But that's that idea of hope springs eternal. There's all of these shiny new people looking forward to the election campaign. But,
yes,
you know, it's a
with
brutal game.
With their faces plastered all over cars around the building.
And, it's a brutal game in the end.
It's a good look for the party, though, I think, to have those new faces. Even looking at the TV pictures yesterday, it's that generational change in the party. They're not presenting the same people who went to the country in 2011. So that's been good, I think, for Fine Gael. And they're going to emphasise that. Younger people, new faces, new blood.
And it's the same thing, seeing as how we're all mentioning what we were doing in Tullamore, but with the Taoiseach this morning, we were saying before we started, you've kind of got two incumbent Harrises. Of course, the comparison, I presume, is quite flattering. But you've two incumbent Harrises presenting themselves as the candidates of change. And at the moment, it seems to be working for each of them.
Yeah, in Simon Harris's case, you know, he's the youthful new leader, the youthful new Taoiseach. He was emphasising what he talked about, blended politics. Half of the parliamentary party incumbents, which gives them an electoral advantage, but another half are new people with new ideas, and this will give a new image to the party.
On the other hand, watch Fianna Fáil, because with more incumbency, on a smaller vote, they could end up doing better than Fine Gael, given that whole incumbency favourites.
Yeah, and you know, Fianna Fáil is looking forward to this general election campaign when it comes. If you're talking to the individual TDs and senators, they feel they've got a real chance. They always feel, giving the media a kick, they always feel that they're underestimated. Mm-hmm. And yet, I'd like to point out that they were biggest party in local government, biggest party in the last general election, and think they're going to do very well, thank you very much, with more constituencies and more seats.
It's been interesting through all this think-in season as well, Sandra, hasn't it? Looking at, you know, what's Fianna Fáil in particular claiming? Well, there, you know, clearly they're saying the mojo on housing, that's been us. And you get the Greens going, you know, cutting childcare costs and giving you more time, that's been us. So there's a bit of a tussle going on, isn't there, for, you know, everyone's unique selling point in terms particularly of this final budget before the general election.
Completely. And it's kind of fascinating to watch. There's always jockeying around the budget. There's always this sort of tussle for who owns the good news. And there's going to be a lot of good news, we think, because there's a lot of money going around at the moment. But it's particularly acute this year, and we've really seen it. Party leaders, Roderick O'Gorman out there telling everybody what he wants in the budget in relation to both childcare and newborn children. Neil Richmond, the Fine Gael junior minister, talking about that move on higher stamp duty on bulk purchase of homes seemed to take Fianna Fáil by surprise. Some interesting dynamics at play there. But yes, they're all trying to own the ideas, and it's all about carving out their identity again ahead of the election.
And even between the coalition partners now, you know, I mean, they're vying for the same space, because I was lying in bed last night just flicking through my Twitter feed and came across the Green Party there saying Fine Gael are coming to this late to the table, or late to the party over the childcare stuff, which Simon Harris was talking about yesterday, you know. So there's a whole lot of competition and a whole lot of I suppose keenness amongst all of them to mark out a bit of space for themselves and to take credit for stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a natural thing within the coalition, that they want to assert their own identities. But I think they're going to be heading towards the general election campaign in lockstep. They know if they fall out with each other and break up, it's going to be their electoral disadvantage.
And that's actually a really interesting point, because I was talking to somebody there this morning. And do you remember the moment when the coalition between Fine Gael and Labour was breaking up? And you had this image on the steps of Leinster House of Joan Barton and Enda Kenny, who were known not to have the best of relationships together. And of course, there'd been the whole disagreement about the timing of that election. So they come out together and they're standing on the steps. And then that image just of Enda going, right, so hopping into the car and leaving her behind. I mean, it was an image of the end of a coalition. You get the sense this time, particularly Simon Harris, Micheál Martin, they want to be doing it together. So however and whenever it happens, it will be jointly agreed.
Yeah, I'm not completely convinced it's going to be jointly agreed, to be honest, but I do think they want to manage the end of the coalition. They want to make sure that it doesn't fall in disarray and it doesn't collapse in some way, because any bitterness that surfaces is bad for all of them. I do think ultimately it is solely a decision for the Taoiseach, and that he will pretty much make it and tell the other coalition party leaders, but we don't really know what really is the dynamic at play there. The other party leaders have said they expect to be consulted, they hope to be consulted, but I think really it's something that can give Fine Gael an electoral advantage. So I would be surprised if Simon Harris completely gives that over.
But of course, he was saying this morning, I think it was actually when he was talking to you, that the coalition had worked well together and he wanted it to end well as well.
Yeah.
So that was an interesting comment, and he said he would consult with other leaders. But it was interesting as well, earlier in the week, obviously the leaders met on Monday night for their coalition leaders meeting. It was addressed by the two finance ministers as well. And the following morning, as the sort of the tension over the proposals from Neil Richmond on stamp duty were dissipating a little bit, the Taoiseach was in government buildings talking to us, and he was saying that they're going to go forward with coherence over the budget. So there's still that effort that you're talking about there to sort of pull together in this period.
Yeah, but leaders say one thing, and you get the sense from
what
all
are
the
you
parties.
Saying, Áine Lollar?
I mean, there's just, it's like trying to, hold back the kids on the way into Christmas. Do you know what I mean? Just this sense of
that's
momentum and impetus
is,
that's building. Yeah. I mean, keeping those backbenchers locked down, tied down and turning up for votes, it's not going to be an easy job, I'm just saying.
And I spoke to a number of TDs yesterday, as you did, and ministers and ex-ministers at that Fine Gael event. And to a man and a woman, they wanted to go in November. They're saying, what's the point in waiting? It's like, let's get this done before Christmas. Let's have it done. Everybody's ready.
Is that a song?
We're all revved
up. Have they gone in November? Anyhow,
well, that's the big question. If you believe Simon Harris, they're running to full term, whatever a full term is.
He also interestingly said, and that was agreed with the leaders. And have you asked the other leaders if they've changed their mind? Raising the question that maybe after the budget, the three amigos may sit down in a room, look at each other and say, well, what do you think? And if they came to a view that collectively, maybe this, we could just fold up our tent and go to the country, we still could have, as you said, a November election.
Let's talk about Mary Lou MacDonald, the Sinn Féin leader, Sandra, because she certainly, she's spoken publicly about it today on TVAM. She's been through a lot this past year.
Yes, a huge amount. And she did speak around a year ago, I think, about her health difficulties. She had a hysterectomy. Then over the summer, her father died. She said herself today that they had had a complicated relationship, but she loved him. He was her father. And she revealed today that her husband has been battling cancer over the past year, her husband, Martin, and he has had colorectal cancer. And it happened in a really difficult way. They were on holiday in France last summer. He became very sick, was taken to hospital. It turned out he had a burst bowel, and then they investigated further and they discovered a tumour, and he had to stay in France for several weeks. She did seem to say that he was on the mend, that he was past the worst of it, that type of thing. But clearly she has had a huge amount on her plate over the past year. And she spoke about it with Ireland AM this morning, laying it out. And I suppose there had been, people sort of knew about it politically, but I suppose also in advance of an election, she wanted to get it out there publicly.
And it goes to show you, politicians appear as names and as images on television or on whatever, on your social media feed. But every single one of us has a personal story, a personal life, a background, issues to deal with, whether it's, with your health or with, family members or whatever it is. And people don't often give them that space or give them that understanding.
One thing that is nice, she
certainly illustrates that by coming out and telling her story today.
We can only wish them all well. It is a huge amount to go through. But one thing that is nice about this place actually is the personal interactions between TDs from all kinds of different political persuasions in terms of personal issues.
Yeah. So I'm thinking more of the public perception and stuff we see in the chamber.
Certainly that you can see a lot more personal solidarity mm-hmm. Behind the scenes, and that's something to be welcomed. And coming back to the politics, Paul, Sinn Féin, their bet is on their affordable housing plan that they're putting forward, that that's going to be competitive against what the government is offering. We've turned the corner and we'll do even more of what we're doing already.
Yeah, people remember that Sinn Féin did it first. You know, they came up with, while in opposition, a major policy document in relation to housing. It's their number one priority. It's more than 100 pages, very detailed. And they've subbed it down to 2 pages, and that's going to every single household in the country. So a clear sense from Sinn Féin that this is the priority, want to explain it to. And it's got many different aspects to it. But the one that maybe caught people's attention is in relation to affordable homes. And the idea is quite simple, that by using state land, in which the state retains the ownership of the land, that you're able to build a house which is cheaper, somewhere between 250 and 300,000 euro. And that means if you're able to bridge that affordability gap, it opens up to an awful lot of people that they could actually have a home. And we know so many adults are living with their parents in the back room. They've got married, they've got a kid, they are being driven demented, or they're on very high rents, so therefore can't save. And this opens up an opportunity. And so Sinn Féin is really going after them very hard. You could see in the manner in which Fine Gael has responded to this, more than any other coalition party, lines are being drawn in relation to housing. And I think the electorate does have a radical choice about which way they want to go. But in political terms, it was the Taoiseach Simon Harris who was going after that affordability, raising questions as to whether the banks would give money for such an affordable house. Sinn Féin says absolutely, they haven't raised any objectives. And another issue is just questioning when it comes to sale. If you're going to sell a house which is owned by the state, because it's affordable, owner Bryn wants to try and ensure that affordable houses remain affordable houses. You don't just buy it.
So that would be the condition of resale.
And the condition of resale is to remain that. So it's a really interesting time. And I think that the public is going to have a very clear choice to make, which is quite radical in how it's going to be done. And both sides will be selling very hard.
And it certainly seems, once we get the budget out of the way, housing, immigration, those are going to be two key issues in the election whenever it happens.
Yes, undoubtedly. And we see the government today floating that they're going to further cut back in some way the entitlements of migrants living in state accommodation. And they're they've been gradually tightening this on the social welfare side. They're now talking about people who live in state accommodation. If you're working, you're going to have to make a weekly contribution. I think they're trying to get closer to where Sinn Féin was with the document it put out a few weeks ago on immigration, which also suggested cutting back the entitlements of people arriving to Ireland, and probably also for all of them making it less attractive for people to come here. But I think childcare is the third one then. Housing, immigration and childcare. Sinn Féin launching a childcare document today. I think they're going to talk about childcare for maybe €10 a week. Fine Gael talking about a public childcare model. The Green Party's been talking about that. They clearly think there's a lot of votes in childcare, and it's really going to be up at the top as well.
Yeah, but then the question is, what you're actually achieving with all the money you spend in this. We had the ESRI research, we've had the Commission on Taxation, the NESC, the Children's Alliance, all saying, tackle child poverty. That'll make the biggest, most concentrated difference. Second means-tested child benefit. Take 40,000 children out of poverty straight away. Is it cynical to say maybe there wouldn't be enough votes on that?
I think it's clear that every political party has been talking about extra child benefit payments before the end of the year. Sinn Féin are talking about that in their alternative budget, we understand, as are the government parties. They're talking about increasing the overall monthly rate of child benefit, but they are talking about it being maintained as universal payment. So no, they are not going down the way of means testing it. And yes, I think it would be fair to say they're looking at the broadest possible spectrum of votes on that.
And the universal benefits, of course, is what have been favoured by this government all along, right throughout the cost of living crisis as well. Child allowance is a universal benefit. Electricity credits were a universal benefit. People got them, didn't necessarily need them. Anything like that,
And that brings you back to the Fiscal Advisory Council and their critique of the government's budgeting. And the fact that they say their spending increases, it's 13% ahead of last year already, isn't it? That's fueling inflation to the tune of, what is it, 1,000 household a year? It's a lot of money.
And now they've got 14 billion euro that's suddenly arrived into the coffers are not quite a landed yet, but it's going to be there within a few months' time. So it's a good problem to have, isn't it?
It's a bit like Albert, isn't it, coming back with the 7 billion
or 8 billion?
I think it was 7, maybe it became 8 in the end. Yeah, so it's a great nice pot of money there for whoever the new government is going to be, isn't
it? So they lost the case and they won the prize.
Well, is it? There's the political joust, which is the government says it had to defend the sovereignty of the state, the tax system, the reputation of the revenue commissioners, and on that basis take this case and say we were not in any special deal, cooked up operation with an entity. And then you've got the opposition saying, you mean you had 14 billion sitting there and you chose not to take it when you were defending a case that you knew you were going to lose. But whoever gets into office next time will have this lovely little problem to solve. Mm. 14 billion, the three things we hear is, one, knock off a bit off the national debt. Not many votes in that. Not sure how far that will go.
Looks prudent to the EU, though.
A few billion there, maybe. Chuck some into the long-term savings funds in relation to infrastructure, in relation to climate action and nature. That sounds like a definite. And then we've also heard from people like Taoiseach Simon Harris that infrastructure and housing, you know, capital expenditure, not day-to-day stuff, that could also be a target. So let's see what they do once it's landed. Mm. I still think it's rather strange for a government that could have 14 billion euro rolling into the exchequer, that they don't have a piece of paper or a plan to say this is what we do when it's been running along for 8 years.
I think they didn't expect the result that they got, because that interim judgment in the general court went against the original judgment. They expected that they wouldn't actually be landed with the 14
the
billion.
Civil service plans for all things, usually, like Brexit.
Well, they didn't want to plan for this. Yeah.
Exactly. I'm wondering, are we missing the wood for the trees here? Because, okay, we're getting the 14 billion, but whoever gets elected, and we'll talk about the US election in a moment, whether it's Kamala Harris, whether it's Donald Trump, peak FDI has passed. And in fact, you know, not alone will America be looking to rehouse an awful lot of these corporate taxes that can go around the place. It's also the case, infrastructure, capacity, Ireland's maybe peak attractiveness for FDI has passed. So, you know, this may be the final cherry on the cake, and it might get a lot worse after that.
In relation to the US and you know, calling the profits home and calling the companies home, that said, in the run into every single election, it was said in the run to Obama being elected, it was said with Trump, it was said with Bush, it hasn't happened. Obviously, Ireland is a landing craft in the EU. It's an English-speaking country. We have all of that attractiveness. So I don't think that's...
You're an optimist in that regard.
Well, I don't think that... I mean, the figures tell you that the corporate tax has been flowing in and hasn't shown any sign.
But there's also, and Apple has been warning the government about this.
They did.
There's much more competition for where their money goes. So the fact that we might presume that we're the platform for you know, all of this money, if it's looking in Europe's direction or looking, you know,
around the world.
But the
infrastructure thing is the bigger problem, because more and more of these companies are raising with the IDA the issues of housing, the issues of accommodating their people, and the issues surrounding the electricity grid and the power supply that's available as well, and even things like water and those type of supplies too.
Exactly. And you've got then things, for example, if you're looking at sort of the wider macroeconomics, you know, what happens if it is the case that President Trump decides to sort of cut corporate tax rate in the States? What impact does that have? Joined with Ireland being sort of incapable of delivering, joined with some form of economic war with China. Although, albeit that it seemed that when it came to the cars, which was a key issue in relation to the European Union, it doesn't look as if we're going to be heading down that tariff road. But there's loads of issues that domino effect rather than one key issue, as you mentioned, Joe, causing the bigger problem. But a few dominoes and then things can really go wrong.
It really went wrong for Donald Trump, though, didn't it? They're eating the cats. They're eating the dogs. They're eating the pets. She really got under his skin.
Exactly. And his handlers always say, people who've worked with him in the past, the difficulty is getting him to stay on message. If he stays on message, he does OK. Mm. If he gets riled, he goes off message. He personalises things in a way that the audience won't necessarily like, or he says mad things like what you referenced right there. And the problem, of course, now is that debates live on in the memes, in the clips. It's really about the sound bites. It's not about the substance of the entire debate. And we've all seen those clips over the past couple of days. Early
millions
polling,
of them.
Exactly. Early polling seems to say that certainly she did better. She had a lot more to prove, I think. But she held up, and she definitely held solid on a lot of arguments. She has an advantage on abortion. She obviously wanted to push the debate on that at times, and she got under his skin. Even the handshake at the beginning kind of rattled him. They hadn't met. But there was amazing pictures, was it yesterday then, at the September 11th commemoration, all in a row. Herself, Joe Biden, Bloomberg in between them, and Donald Trump as well. There's a lot of time to go between now and November. I know it's closing in, but it could go either way. It's still very, very tight.
Yes, I mean, she did do well, but she had to do well, because for a Democrat to win, they're going to have to be a couple of percentage points ahead in the popular vote, and they're going to have to be ahead in the swing states. So
yes, that's all that matters. Yeah,
it's a long way. Not even to November, but then on to January, because whatever result there is, say it's a narrow victory, you can see the chaos that could ensue.
And whether the debate will swing it wildly one way or the other, I mean, obviously it's not going to, because, you know, Trump's support is there. It seems to be rock solid. He is, according to one of the latest polls, slightly ahead of Kamala Harris. As you say, it's going to be a question of sliver thin numbers of votes that will decide this election one way or the other. So it's important.
It's nice the way that just in a debating stance, how Harris used the 800,000 polls she mentioned in the context of associating Donald Trump with Putin and dictators, and saying if Putin was in Kyiv, you know, those 800,000 Poles in this swing state might be worried about what would happen to the country that their forefathers and foremothers came from. It was rather adroit. It was done very quickly, very neatly, clearly a training ground move. But there was a couple of times like that where he thought she was deft, and not just talking in general terms, but specifically going after swing states and fractions within those swing states. Because that's
and
all
actually,
it needs.
I was comparing Kamala Harris with Simon Harris earlier in terms of an incumbent. And, you know, as a candidate of change. But she also has, and we've seen this in Mary Lou McDonald over the years, and she showed it on this debate stage the other night. And women have to have it more in politics, Sandra, and that's courage. She stood up there and she looked like she'd be well able to take on not just Donald Trump, but Putin. And in a
it's always
country
about,
divided by gender and issues around sexism, that was a hard tightrope to walk. She walked it well.
Yes, and of course, the American president is also the commander in chief. People need to have complete faith in her. There's never been a female president. Hillary Clinton tried. Kamala Harris seems to be a little closer at this stage, but she did handle it very well, I think. And because she's been held back from the media a lot, she's had a difficult time in the vice presidency. It was really important that she was able to stand her ground and demonstrate that she could do the job.
I suppose one thing, just to mention the Trump stuff again, is that usually it's the economy, stupid, which determines it. People in the United States are dealing with an awful lot of inflation. Trump is pointing the finger back at Biden-Harris, saying it's all their fault. That often is the determining factor in an election. So if Donald Trump can get his mojo back and turn the turret back on to Harris, not about cats and dogs, but in relation to the hardcore economics, and saying it is it's a fact. You know, what you could buy for $1 4 years ago now costs you $1.20. Vote for me, I'll do it for you.
Or will he spiral? That's what Anthony Scaramucci has been betting on. He was even in on Team Kamala Harris in the spin room the other night.
Will they debate each other again? What do you think?
She appears to be open to it, but there's nothing in it for him. Exactly. Those are the early soundings that her team would be open to it. He wouldn't. And he has more to lose, it looks like.
I want to talk about one other issue from this week briefly before we wrap up, Paul. And there was, you know, a really widespread welcome. And obviously after the reset in Anglo-Irish relations for the announcement, finally, of an inquiry into the circumstances surrounding the murder of Pat Finucane, and there have been allegations of collusion repeatedly over the years. The question is, though, you know, we had that big, long investigation into Steak Knife, Operation Canova. We were told, you know, after all the bad chapters before and the various inquiries that had run into mysterious dead ends, no, this was going to be the real deal. And then, hey presto, the report gets published, and short while after, it turns out, oops, MI5 didn't open all the files.
Yeah.
So the chances of ever learning the truth here, I'm just asking.
I think that what was interesting about this particular thing was that the Northern Secretary was over meeting the Finucane family, Hilary Benn. They are now working on the terms of reference in relation to how the inquiry, and, you know, this is a family steeped in law, steeped in experience of how the British state operates. And therefore, if it is the case that they decide to advance it, well, then it's the family deciding that they believe they can secure some information. I don't think anyone would believe that all of the truth is going to come out in relation to what happened to that Finucane killing, a solicitor shot dead in front of his family, with an awful lot of evidence pointing the finger at some form of involvement of state collusion. But I think it's the family who has to make the call. Certainly from the soundings from Dublin, from all political parties, was that they welcomed this new attitude from the British government and the British Prime Minister. But they were saying, if the family is in favour of this, well, then, you know, we would back them on it. So that's the key thing to watch out for. What does the Finucane family ultimately decide? Geraldine, his wife, his son, who's an MP, which way do they want to go?
Still an awful lot of unanswered questions,
yes,
aren't there, Joe?
But the family's determination, since 1989, when Pat Finucane was shot, they have never given up the cause here. They've never given up this idea that they wanted to get justice and get to the back, the truth of what happened to him. And that's despite many setbacks, including setbacks from the British government, you know, various different British governments and the attitude they took. The current government, Hilary Benn, Northern Secretary, I mean, that is obviously their biggest advantage now as things stand. But your question, you know, will all the files ever get published or made available, you know, that's very definitely, there's doubts around that, I would say.
All right. Well, we'll see what happens. Thank you all. And this time next week, this place will be buzzing and hopping and full of excitement, and all the wellies will have been taken down to the ploughing and back.
What was that tip you had following on from Liv Racker, that you need to bring a pair of wellies that have been
used?
Yeah,
well, the thing is, particularly if you're a new party leader, they kind of notice at the ploughing whether your wellies, like whether they'd have been taken out before. And if you rock up in a pair of brand new green
ones,
wellies,
yeah,
it's not very cool. You know that, Joe.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Mine were very well worn, let me say.
Yeah, so from the Dirty Welly Brigade, it's goodbye.